Testing.
One of the things, of course, has been a real challenge during this period is we've had these growths anywhere from 6 to 15% a year, particularly as we reached beyond what we might have in teaching resources, has been finding people to open labs and to keep things going in the fall and maintain your quality. I think that we've done a reasonable job at that, but there again, if we at times had been able to call on some top-notch graduate students that already had master's degrees, we have not used them as far as the lecturers, but I'm talking about as backup people to help you in the labs. We have not. We've continued to keep all of our labs going, and I know some of our institutions in their beginning courses have and I can understand why they've tended to slack a little on the lab aspect, because it was hard to keep enough people to keep that type of thing going. So that's been a real challenge.
Of course, I think, Dr. Glasner, those of us who have dealt with numbers in non-research institutions would answer you here by saying that you're blessed in a research institution by having research personnel and by having graduate students and by having many more options than
I would certainly agree. And I can, and I, as I have worked through these years, I've become more appreciative all the time of the interaction that can come between extension research and teaching. And of course, I have worked at one time or other in every one of these functions, and although I realize my own responsibility is primarily in the academic one, I still have an interest in the overall. For example, in one of these developmental areas, I worked very much with George Hyatt when we were bringing Ed Boone in here, and we were getting the doctorate program through in that area. As you can know from your many years of experience in developmental work, that sort of thing didn't reach with favor with everyone, and yet we just kept working it along until there was a matter of involvement of extension in the academic program.
This was a new venture. I was somewhat involved in the early days in setting up the program at the University of Wisconsin, which trained a lot of these people, and it was a kind of program that didn't exist in the country when extension administrative leaders started being trained in a new way. Well, Dr. Glasner, you have certainly demonstrated, both by what you've said and by the enthusiasm with which you said it, one of the reasons that I think the School of Agriculture has come along. But there are one or two other programs that I'd like to have some evaluation of. When you came in as the chief officer in the School of Agriculture dealing with teaching programs, by whatever title it may have been called, the two-year program was just in its infancy.
That's
if
right.
I recall correctly, about 1960 was the first year that
the first
students
class.
Were on board.
That's right.
And that's the year you became the
we
director,
had 90-some students that fall.
The director of instruction. How about picking that program up and give us a little insight as to how that found its place within the School of Agriculture and within the university setting, and some evaluation of what it's meant to the state?
I'd say, really, I can't say enough good as far as the program is concerned. And you probably remember that in the initial stages, we had a few faculty members that were somewhat reserved in relation to wondering whether it would dilute our program and so forth.
Had some who were more than reserved. We had some who were absolutely opposed to it.
Well, they were still feeling that way when I came in. In fact, we had two departments that after they saw that the wagon was going to roll, that came in the first year that I was on the job. To pretty much put in focus, I would say it has given us an opportunity to have a comprehensive program all the way from the two-year through the PhD that we never would have had we not had the program. Some of the earlier concerns about competitiveness for jobs, dilution of programs and all have gone out the window. We have found these two-year people are basically looking for a different type of positions. They're action people, 50% of them returning to the home farms. Our little studies that we've worked with the people in sociology show that three times as many of these students expect to inherit a farm as does, say, a four-year graduate. Also, another interesting thing is that the program has been blended. We have not hired separate faculty. And if you check back to the history of this school, in the 20s, they had a program, and it faded away. And I've often wondered, and they mixed the students. In other words, the students that were in the agricultural courses were the same as the four-year. And Mr. Willis Britton in Brevard was a graduate of that program. You probably remember.
Oh, yes, I do.
Well, I've often wondered if through the years it had been, when you were here and they were making the studies, that the one program I know we looked at strongly was the one in Massachusetts, and we looked at one in Michigan, one in Iowa. Those programs, they were separate. Well, we have kept ours separate. From the standpoint, yes, we may be using the same professors, but the only person who's paid 100% out of the Ag Institute is my associate, is Dr. Craig. All the others are part people. Now, some of our faculty have found this highly stimulating. They realize that they have the youngsters in there that are plenty capable of being in the four-year program. We've got programs in entomology, we've got manuals in animal nutrition that our own faculty has written because they found that there was just not the materials available to teach these people. Also, this year we will reach about 1,800 of these people, with about 90 to 95% of them still being in North Carolina. And we find that they're on boards of education. One of the strong leaders is on the Board of Commissioners in one of the eastern counties, that they are rendering a real service to agriculture. They're pushing the institution. Also, they're some of the first that our county extension personnel can turn to from the standpoint of setting up new demonstrations and that type of thing.
Is the demand for the program remaining strong?
It's remained real strong. We you may have remembered we had kind of a gentleman's agreement. We made a survey back during the time, it might have been just right after you left, with the departments. And we had kind of a gentleman's agreement with the university administration and with the, at that time, Consolidated Office. We tried to operate in the 300 to 400 level. We thought we could do that without infringement on other programs. We're still operating in that particular level. At the moment, I would say that most of the concerns, they really didn't develop to be concerns. We have also developed in the school a placement service, which coordinates with the university placement service. We started on a part-time basis, and then it has evolved into a full-time basis. This individual works with two-year students as well as the four-year students, and we have many firms that are coming here that interview for both. The two-year lad usually likes the job that takes him out of doors where the action is actually taking place. Not many of them are really interested in managerial types of jobs, although some of them in our recent survey showed that they have gone into those types of opportunities.
Prompts me to tell a little story which you may have heard told before. When we were exploring the possibility of this program and preparing to ask for a special appropriation to initiate it, I had taken a group of about 20 farm leaders from various parts of the state on a DC-3 chartered airplane paid for by a good friend of the university to visit Purdue, Iowa State, Wisconsin, Michigan State. And when we were at Michigan State, where they had had a two-year program, one of these farmers asked the dean, Dean Cowden, said, what do these two-year program graduates do when they get out. And the dean said, well, some of them are trustees of the university, and a lot of them provide employment for the four-year graduates. Is there some truth in that?
There is some truth to that. And one of the real rewarding things that we're seeing now, the president of the first class, we're working now on an alumni group for Ag Institute, and we meet once a year. And it's beginning to build and gain some momentum. Well, another enrichment thing that we started in the late 60s, and has now reached $500 million, has been our endowed scholarship fund. Of course, that probably doesn't sound like a lot of money to people today, but we started when Sears and Roebuck, you remember Vern Freeman at Purdue, and you remember during your time that we basically depended on the land-grant schools, depended on the money that came from Sears. They operated in 39 states. Well, the program was good. And the Sears Foundation got a new director. And we went through a period of about 3 years of studies, and we'd carry our material, and they'd say yes, they were real satisfied, and they were real pleased. But it was evident he was a Princeton man, that's fine. But he was concerned about the private schools not having the amount of money for their libraries that they should. So you can guess what happened. In a short period of time, in 1 year, we basically lost all the scholarship money we had in our school. That was one major source. Another major source was Smith Douglas. Again, I went with the people from our foundation office, with Bob Wood. We go to the officials there. They're happy with the way we've handled the program, but what basically had happened, when they were bought out and went on the national board, they said, we cannot do in all 48 states what we have been doing, or 40-some, what we've been doing for Virginia and North Carolina. So we took the problem to the Ag Foundation, and the Ag Foundation then set up a committee to go to work on it. And it looked like initially we would never get our first $50,000, with the idea that we would use only the interest. Well, this year, this was started 10 years ago. This year, we're going to pass our $500,000. Now, my leading up story is something that's coming that's really rewarding. And so this is an investment here, and we know now that we have about 70 scholarships a year for our school, and we know that we've got that $500,000 with interest coming in for scholarships. One of the first men that gave here, you know, sometimes you ever wake up and just something hits you. I had worked with a fellow over in Chatham County by the name of Clyde Ford. I had seen him. Bob Wood had helped us in drawing up our plan, and we had gone to the Ag Foundation, and they had approved the plan. I woke up one morning, not particularly bothered anything, but about 4 o'clock in the morning, I thought about something that Clyde Ford had said to me. He said, North Carolina's been good to me, and I don't have any children, and I'd like to do something. And it just dawned on me. I told Bob Wood about it, and he said, well, let's go have lunch with him. We went and had lunch with him. He said, you know, I've been drawing up my will and drew it up last week, but I like this thing from the standpoint of having something that would carry on. Well, he is dead now, but before he died, he had already put a block of stock in here. That followed with FCX putting a stock in honor of Mr. Arndt. They followed by putting some in honor of our late colleague Brooks James and others, and it's come along, and now we'll have people that will call us because we had a program here. Now, the interesting thing that occurred this last fall, the president of the first class in the Ag Institute, when he heard about the program, and some of these also Ag Institute students, he says, you know, I'd like to start something going in the Ag Institute in honor of my father. So the first graduate now in the Ag Institute has started an endowed fund that the first scholarship would be awarded this fall to a student in the Ag Institute.
Well, that's great. Well, I think that this is a remarkable story, two or three remarkable stories about, one, the way the new programs have been developed and how the involvement of the faculty has been secured, about how the response from the students has been so evident, and the response from the people in the field has been so great, and all of which reflects on the leadership of those of you who have thought about the development. I think it would be only proper to insert here that the real beginning of the two-year program was with a man named Victor Rice.
Harry Denry.
When Dr. Boston became chancellor and left the director of instruction position, Dr. Lovern was brought back to fill that position. But almost immediately, Dr. Cummings took a leave of absence from the director of research position to go down and head up our program in Peru. And so we set about to fill the director of instruction position on a temporary basis, holding it open for Dr. Lovern after Dr. Cummings came back to resume his position as director of research. And it was at that point that I enticed Professor Victor Rice, who had been at North Carolina State, who was retiring in Massachusetts, but was a very inspiring and scholarly person, to come back and work with us in the teaching program.
I remember meeting with him over.
And he made, we made a survey among the county agents and vocational teachers, and they indicated, of course, an enormous number of students who might be interested in such a program. We knew that the figures were far too large, but there was evidence of interest. And what you have said about the current acceptance of the program is a great tribute to you and to Brooks James, because in the initial stages, the chief academic officer working with the chancellor was very much opposed to it. Dean of the faculty, I guess, was his title at that time. And I think that the idea was sound, and certainly you have developed many exciting facets of it that have caused it to move forward. And as one who was involved in it, again, I can't help but put in here a word of very high commendation. But before we wind up, let me ask you some questions on another area. I believe you've given us a...
I'll tell you one of the things here too that has basically changed in this function since the earlier years. I'm very much heavily involved in graduate programs now, as well as the undergraduate, which I'm very much interested in. And that's where you have the... In other words, I have an interest in the two-year student and the... We have a graduate studies committee for the school.
You have a graduate studies committee, a baccalaureate committee, and a two-year committee.
Right. And this graduate committee is basically made up of three named professors at our school.
Now, when you say three named professors...
Reynolds professors, appointed by the dean. Also, we have... ex officio are the two members that are on the administrative board of the graduate school. This group works with the new program development. In other words, when we were working on the new program in toxicology, on the new one in nutrition, on the new or the doctorate program in physiology, or on emphasis in pest management.
Has that been primarily an effort to break down the departmental walls?
I'd say partly that, and also to give thrust to those programs, well, that would be, that would go beyond the departmental level.
That's what I mean.
And also to serve as kind of a, to see that we had some equilibrium in relation to what we were appointing to the graduate faculty. We review, in other words, the department makes a recommendation. We review those before they go into the graduate school. We also work on the levels for assistantships, Are we behind in this area? What are our problems there? And this is done from the standpoint of serving as kind of a sounding board and also as a facilitator for our programs. And the department heads are aware of what's going on. For example, when we have a retreat or something, some of the things that we're doing there may be brought to their attention. So it's kind of a planning group and an expediting group in dealing with the graduate school, because as we got involved with the numbers that we're involved in, and I think one of the open areas that we have here now, we need to do more at the master's level for people who are not going to be researchers but are serving our public clientele and need the knowledge in that area. So that's an area that's developed a great deal. We also, excuse me.
Go ahead.
We also have developed in the outreach, not only with the community colleges, but with most of the four-year schools in the state.
Is there any feeling on the part of the community colleges now that the two-year program should be in their institutions?
Not that we're aware of. We've kept regular coordination with that group. And most of the things that they have, as you know, the two-year program here was, the institution was into that before the technical program. We were in 2 or 3 years. We're in general in more specialized areas than they're in.
You have the equipment and...
For example, not many of them have farms.
That's right.
So the animal area is one of our major ones. Food science is one of our...
Some of them are developing very good programs in landscaping.
That's right. That's right. And in the horticultural area, we have a limit in that. And we're more in the ornamental and fruit and vegetable area. So we have coordinated. And at times they've looked at some of the specialty areas and then found that it would take a statewide program, such as something like an agricultural chemicals or pest control, and have tended to leave it primarily in our hands.
Well, since the program emerged out of a feeling of need before the community colleges were organized, I think it should be noted that some of us felt at the time that If the vocational agricultural people had been willing to use some of the funds that they had or had been permitted to use some of those funds in instances where schools were being consolidated and departments were closed out, had they been willing to develop a post-high school program, we would have encouraged them to do so, and mm-hmm. did encourage them, but mm-hmm. we found that they were not interested in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if the community colleges, since they are now pretty highly developed, have developed the feeling that they should have a program.
No, in fact, there's been less concern about being competitive, I'd say, in the last 5 years than there was in the first years that the program came in. I think we've had the feeling that things that they could do, that there's enough for everyone, that we should try to do those things that would be more statewide in nature and more specialized.
Well, Dr. Glasner, what year did you come back from Maryland to North Carolina?
I came back from Maryland in 1946.
1946, and this is 79. So for 3 years.
Yeah, this fall.
This fall, you have been a professional leader at North Carolina State in the School of Agriculture in capacities ranging all the way from a beginning teacher and research worker up to a top administrator. And I would like to just bring this to conclusion by asking you if you would to give us a little bit of insight into some of the national roles that you've played and perhaps some international involvement that you've had. I know that you have been an officer in a number of the national associations of directors of instruction. Give us a little insight into some of the special recognitions that have come your way.
Well, I've enjoyed working with the National Association of State Universities and Land Grant Colleges. I'm almost a retread in that group. During my first 6 years, in the sixth year, I became chairman of our section, Resident Instruction in the Division of Agriculture. Then I went on to be a Senate member for the total association. Then the year that I was chairman, I also, along with a representative from the Office of Education, was invited to give a paper in OECD in Paris.
What is OECD?
Office of Economic Development. And this one was the one, and I remember enjoying, that was in the 60s, enjoyed that very much. Then I've also in the region have served, well, in the functions in our section, and secretary, and chairman, and program chairman, and RICOP representative. I say I retread now this last year.
What is RICOP?
RICOP is the Resident Instruction Committee on Policy. Then this last year I was, then I've served also as secretary and vice chairman for our division in the,
in other words, you've been very deeply involved in various capacities as chairman and vice chairman and represented in the land grant association structure.
Right. And then this last year I was invited to participate in their policy committee. You probably have done that too, in the one that they pick out people with different ranks. They pick out some college presidents, they pick out some deans and some directors, and I was one of those this year.
And what's been the extent of your international involvement?
Well, actually, I participated in the marketing group with Wayne Courtney, and we had the group with the bankers. I have participated.
That's a group of business people and professional people,
right,
who went abroad to contact.
And we worked particularly one time there with the Common Market. I'll never forget being in England when we were on a seminar there, and when you saw, when we were speaking about integrated operations in our country, their difference of interpretation is compared with ours. And I thought, when we use the same language, and that it means something different.
Yes.
Then with this thing with the OEC, which came out of the Office of Education in Washington, I was invited, yes, with that, with our division. Then I worked one short period, one summer, with you down in when we were on that Pan American School.
Yes.
And
yes,
and
I see this beautiful lamp from Honduras that you must have picked up on that trip.
And there have been several things that have come along with the international aspect that I have felt that maybe it wasn't the right decision, but I felt I couldn't be gone as long as some of them have been. So I've tended to take ones of short time assignment, and most of them have been in developed countries.
I think we've come to the point where we probably ought to wind this down. You've had so many interesting and very exciting things to talk about. Are there any other major things, as you look at the School of Agriculture and its development, that you would like to call attention to before we close out?
Well, I think primarily the introduction of women into the all phases.
How many women do you have in agriculture here now?
All right, in our baccalaureate programs at the undergraduate level, we would run better than 30% of the 2,600 would be women.
Would be women. What fields would they be in primarily?
And in the graduate programs, about 20%.
What fields?
In everything. Probably one of the first areas that you saw them moving into was into the veterinary medicine. Of the 38 or so spaces that we work on a statewide basis now, about 40% of those accepted would be women. You see them in animal science, would be running about 40% cleaning. In food science this last year, it ran half and half. In horticulture, it ran 40% of women. So I'd say, and in graduate work, they're into plant pathology. You'd find a lesser percent in agronomy and a lesser percent in bio and ag engineering, but they're there. And all of us have heard of the father-son business operations. Well, there are many of these things now that are going into daughter-father business operations.
Or mother-daughter. Maybe.
Or mother-daughter. In fact, it was it's real intriguing. I'm telling you, it's evident too that some of them have some real business management. So that's been a real change in the urbanites coming into the food and natural resource and agricultural areas. It's quite a change.
Well, it's obvious that the changes in population, the great reductions in the numbers of people who are actually engaged in farming, the great increase in the amount of capital and technology that's being used, the great increase in all of the things, technologies such as plant breeding and fertilizers have tended to change the whole thing. This idea of the agricultural school being sort of the so-called Cal College concept, you don't sense that so much anymore,
no.
Do you?
Did you know that we have 100 students a year that are accepted in the primary medical areas?
100 students a year.
In fact, working, one of the other things is kind of a side area that still is involved in a good deal of time. Of course, statewide now, out of the university system, I work on the veterinary program. But the provost and the others on the campus that I serve as an ex officio with the committee on campus that works with medical students. And we now have a national group of the national organization, the name doesn't come to me at the moment, that I helped them get chartered two years ago. Who's at their banquet the other night, of which we have a committee that reviews their credentials, and I'm just ex officio, but kind of quick with them to see their things going along. We had 50-some students this last year that were accepted into MD programs. And of course, biology, good biology, is basic to agriculture, and it's basic to medicine.
Yeah.
And we have 15 or 18 that are going to dental school. We have them in podiatry, we have them in optometry, and of course I've become involved in this area, so I'm interested in it too, through the regional contract program. So I go with representative from Mr. Friday's office when they visit the students at Pennsylvania and at Tennessee. And one of the things that pleases me is I find these youngsters that they don't mind telling me that, gee, my work is such that I feel I can hold my own with anyone.
You feel that they're proud.
They feel that they're proud.
Well, I think that this enthusiasm rubs off on them, and the fact that it's been worked out in such a way that it's durable and sound makes it all the more exciting. And I think that the progress of the School of Agriculture is remarkable. Do you find that the North Carolina State University School of Agriculture is highly respected among the other schools in the country?
Yes. People ask us, and of course I enjoy sharing with them, but I have been brought in on other campuses and requested to do studies on their program. So I think that shows respect to the campus. And also, I don't know what you saw in the January issue of the Chronicle of Higher Education. They listed the schools of agriculture and forestry that were rated by 4,000 faculty people throughout the United States in how they stood. And North Carolina was in that top group. If you put Berkeley and Davis together, we were about the seventh or eighth place. Of course, we all realize that's just one opinion, but then if you look at us on the production of what our students have done at the baccalaureate level and the master's level and the PhD level, we do stand in the arena. Also, too, as you and I were discussing before dinner, we relatively are a young school in these areas as compared with a Cornell or Wisconsin or an Iowa.
Tribute to those of you who are giving the leadership to it, and some of us who came along earlier when developments had not gone nearly so far, can only tip our hats to you and be very proud to see some of the programs you have brought about and how exciting they are. We will sign this interview off at this point. Dr. Graysner, you will receive a copy of the transcript when it's out, and if there are items that you would like to add, you should certainly feel free to do so, as well as to make corrections. This is D.W. Calvert signing off an interview with Dr. E.W. Graysner, who is Associate Dean and Director of Academic Affairs for the School of Agriculture at North Carolina State University. This is May 9th, 1979. This will be labeled Comments Concerning Dr. E.W. Graysner. My personal acquaintance with Dr. Graysner traces back to the time he was a high school student in Brevard, North Carolina. His father, Julian A. Graysner, was the county agricultural agent in Transylvania County when I took my first job at Brevard College after graduating from Berea College in the spring of 1935. Ed's father was a splendid cooperator. He assisted me in many, many ways and remained a great friend. Soon after I left Brevard, Ed Graysner enrolled there as a student. It was reported that he was asked to design a poultry house and to follow through with poultry projects he had been conducting under the leadership of his father and in connection with the 4-H Club. Ed was always an energetic and a very creative young man. Professor R.H. Ruffner, who was head of the Animal Husbandry Department at North Carolina State College when Ed was a student there, told me one time that Ed Graysner was the only student he had ever known who seemed to have brains in his toes. In other words, he was saying that he was brains all over. When Professor R.S. Dierstein retired as head of the Department of Poultry, Dr. Graysner was a logical choice as his successor. I did not have the opportunity of working with Dr. Graysner in his present capacity. He succeeded Dr. Brooks James, who was in charge of instruction in the School of Agriculture while I was dean, and who also succeeded me. In other words, when I left, Dr. James moved into my position, and this opened the way for Dr. Graysner to be selected as the chief administrative officer for instructional purposes. It is obvious that he has been creative and that the School of Agriculture has one of the strongest programs in the United States now, and
largely as a result of his effective leadership. He has been very supportive of the two-year program, which was started while I was dean, and which Dr. James assisted in developing.